It is the Brett Witterbull Show, News Talk 1110 and 99.3 WBT. Great to be here with you. I'm excited for this show. I've been waiting for this show for the better part of the last 3 hours to get underway, and I want to hear from you, Charlotte, at 704-570-1110. Kamala Harris declared victory on this trip to Central America and Mexico City. She says it's been a success. It's a victory. It's worked out exactly as she thought. How do you assess it? And more than that, how do you assess sort of where we are in this country right now? We're coming up on, so what is it? It's June the 9th. So before too long, it'll be June the 20th, which means we're essentially coming up on 5 months of the Biden-Harris administration. Now, I know it's not quite 6 months yet, but we can do the 5 month mark. What kind of a score are you giving them? And be honest, if you're somebody who is supportive of what they're doing, if you're relieved that Trump isn't the president, if you're just happy with the way things are going, I'd like to hear from you. I'd like for you to tell me what it is that you're grading this administration on. The fact of the matter is, we've had a bunch of proposals come out, right? We've had a bunch of them come out. The voting thing, the infrastructure, the stimulus, all that sort of stuff, a $6 trillion spending plan. But none of that has come to fruition. The only stuff that's come to fruition, I mean, just objectively, has been, I think there's a bill on holding China to account that's moving. There's also the COVID-19 money that's gone out into the bloodstream of the economy. Other than that, there's really not a lot to point to. There's not a lot to point to in terms of action. And so the question I have for you is it possible, and this is the question, is it possible the Biden administration is all bark and no bite? Nobody seems to be willing to come out and push for tax increases in a way that has any real possibility of passing through the House and the Senate. It's why you heard Janet Yellen, the Secretary of the Treasury, come out a couple of days ago. She's making one of these world tours, and she's meeting with finance ministers, who are just basically the Treasury Secretaries of European countries. She's meeting with these finance ministers, and they're all agreeing sort of on the back of a piece of paper that let's all agree that we don't go below 15% on our corporate tax rate. That's the base. That's the bottom line. That's the lowest we're willing to go when it comes to corporate taxes. But that's not a treaty. That's not a binding document. You come in and have a Republican get elected in 2024, sworn in 25. That Republican can continue to preserve the Trump tax cuts because that's when they'll next be up for consideration to blow them up. What is going to happen? How is that going to work? How does that work out? And again, I would ask you to grade this administration and to grade it based on what you're seeing in terms of a performance. In another era, we would be looking at this in a different way. We would be looking at the economy. We'd be saying, all right, how is the economy looking? How is it that the employment picture is playing out? Now, admittedly, we've not really been here before. The last time we had a pandemic was 1918, and there really aren't any people who can recall what the policy was like in the wake of that time. But the economy seems to be moving fairly well. You know, you don't have people going to work because we're paying people not to go to work, but you're not seeing food lines. You're not seeing people lined up around the block to get the food pantry. You're not seeing people lined up around the block to get the handout. You're not seeing riots in the streets based on a lack of opportunity. What you're seeing is political jostling and things like that that are taking place. But you're not seeing a place where we're in absolute free fall. I'll give you a good example of it. You're not seeing anything that looks like 2009. See, 2009 was a much more dangerous time than we are in right now, I do believe, because essentially the government is knotted up at 50-50. And Chuck Schumer knows darn well that if he blows up the filibuster, it's game over if the Republicans take back the Senate. It is absolutely game over. And you will be seeing stuff rammed through at a huge rate. It won't even be funny. But here's the point. The people in charge of the governance in D.C. understand it's a 50-50 country. Joe Biden wants to pretend that it's a 70-30 Democrat country. It's 50-50 right now. And what I mean by that is the way the power is divided inside the House and the Senate. The mechanics of the House and the mechanics of the Senate mean you're not going to push through big, crazy legislation. It's not possible. The only way you can try to do it is to blow up the filibuster. but you will end up with a disaster on your hands. You better be super happy with whatever it is you pass, because you will not pass anything that significant again for the next 25 years, and you can make book on that. Absolutely can. At some point, what you're going to see from the people in power in the House and the Senate, that's the Democratic Party, is you're going to start to see defensive legislating. You're going to start to see stuff where they try to pass reasonable-looking legislation that will act as a cover on some of the more radical agenda items. They're going to say, hey, look, we're just trying to do this thing for the children. This is going to be for the kids. This is going to be the Kids Should Be Safe in School Pandemic Act. That's all we're doing, and it's going to pay for books to go to the kids. And the stuff will start passing out that way. But when they talk about doing infrastructure the way they're talking about doing infrastructure, the idea that we're going to spend billions and trillions of dollars on stuff that is not infrastructure related, that window is closing very quickly. Because remember what the rule of thumb is on politics in Washington, D.C. The rule of thumb on politics in Washington, D.C. is when a new administration comes into office, they realistically have about 6 months to get something done. Because you get to that 6 month, that makes it July. Now we're going to be in the summer recess. Now we're climbing towards the fall. You're going to have a debt ceiling debate take place. You are absolutely going to have that be the case. There's going to be a battle over the debt ceiling. You're also going to have to see those funding bills that are going to have to get passed out, the defense authorization acts and all those sorts of things that have to be done on an annual basis. And that's going to get the situation knocked down and tied down. And then what do you have? You have the holidays right around the corner. You've got your Thanksgiving. You've got your Hanukkah, Kwanzaa. You've got your Diwali. You've got your you've got your Christmas. You've got all of that coming down the pipeline. Now it's a new year, and then suddenly, what do you know? It's 2022. It's 2022. And you know what happens the minute 2022 starts? People positioning for the congressional races in November. So you have to think of this in terms of steps. It's not going to be a blowout win. There will not be a blowout win. There's going to be a kick with time expiring on the clock and a lot of anger and a little bit of heartbreak. But that doesn't mean we're not going to play again. Oh, boy, did I set him up beautifully. I'm Brett Winterbull, 800-800. I'm about to give the rush number. News Talk 1110-993 WBT. It is the Brett Winterbull Show. Great to be here with you, and I'll tell you what I think is absolutely incredible about what it is that we're looking at out there. You're not seeing fall off with people who are still committed to seeing America remain a strong country. You're not seeing fall off in that regard. I don't think you're seeing people who are being demoralized. I think you're seeing people still being very, very confident about what it is that's going on out there in the big, bad, wider world. Not whiter, wider, as in W-I-D-E-R, not whiter. I don't care about color. It's not an issue that is ever an issue with me. But, you know, I'm looking at some of the stuff that's going on here. Let me take you to a place. This is a perfect example of the failing of our policy at the federal level, okay? Here is Antony Blinken. Do you know, raise your hand if you know who Antony Blinken is. Does anybody know who Antony Blinken is? See, it's weird, right? You would think you would know who this guy is. He's the Secretary of State. So he is the face of American diplomacy out there around the world. And Antony Blinken is testifying yesterday about Iran and their nuclear ambitions. Here's what he says to the Senate in his testimony, cut number 28.
Iran's nuclear program is galloping forward. It is enriching at higher levels, 20%, even 60% in small cases. It's using more advanced centrifuges. The breakout time that the agreement established, an agreement that on its terms was working, as verified by our intelligence folks as well as the international experts, pushed the breakout time to a year. We're now down, based on published reports, to a few months.
Okay, this is hugely important. So at the time that Donald Trump blew up the Iranian nuclear deal and said, we're not going to be a part of this thing, at the time that that occurred, Iran was about a year away from having a nuclear weapon. And they weren't supposed to have enriched uranium. They weren't supposed to be running centrifuges. They weren't supposed to be doing any of that. But we found out from Israeli intelligence and other actors in the region that Iran was violating that JCPOA, right? That joint agreement between the Russians, the Iranians, the United States, France, Germany, Britain, China, whoever was a part of that deal, the 5+1, which they never call it the 6, but it's the 5+1 deal. And so Trump looked at this and said, okay, hold on. So we are giving the Iranians billions of dollars in relief, in sanctions relief, and they are taking that money and they are plowing it into either A, the enrichment of a nuclear weapons program, and or B, they're taking the money and plowing it into Syria to fund Islamic militias, Iranian militias, and Iranian terrorist groups that were going around murdering tens of thousands of people on the ground. The Iranians are bad actors. They are dead serious when they tell you they want death to America and death to Israel. And given the opportunity, they'll do that. So Donald Trump cuts off the money, says we're not giving the Iranians any more money. And do you know what happens inside of Iran? Protests begin. The government starts to get unstable. You've got the dirtbags that run that country. And I'm not talking about the people of Iran. They're every bit as much the victims as the people of China are. I'm talking about the dirty, stinking, rotten leadership in that country that exports jihad, that exports murder and death, throws gays off of rooftops, oppresses women, stones women in the streets for being adulteresses. I mean, it's a horrible situation all the way around in Iran. And so what happens with their leaders? They come out and they say things like, you have got to get back into the JCPOA because we are suffering. Our people are starving. Our economy is collapsing. You have got to let us back into the deal. And Trump goes, no, I'm not going to let you back into the deal. Tell us, prove to us you've gotten rid of your nuclear program. Then we can talk about doing the deal. Well, what happens when Biden becomes president? The first order of business is he transmits information to the Iranians saying, what do you say we bring you guys back into the deal and give you relief? So think of this, right? This is a boxing match. No, better yet, this is a street fight out on a sidewalk. And one guy wants to kill the other guy. And the guy that is the target of the killing, Iran wants to kill America, right? That guy is getting beaten back. Here comes Biden and pulls Trump off of Iran and says, we're going to give you the sanctions relief you want. And what do you hear from little itty bitty Tony Blinken? You know Tony Blinken's claim to fame? He used to sing songs in the 80s. He used to make his own records. Look it up. Look up on YouTube. Look up Tony Blinken. He sings all kinds of, and I love you, and I'm playing my guitar, and I'm loving you. And then all of a sudden he goes from that to being the Secretary of State. What the heck is that? What is this, like American Idol for diplomacy? So this guy, this clown who's running our foreign policy, now goes and testifies in front of the Senate and says, hey, the breakout time was like a year. Now it's like a couple of months. So we're going to give them billions of dollars in sanctions relief. And what are they going to do? They're going to have a nuclear weapon in like 4 months. And then one day, son of a, what was it that Joe Biden said in Ukraine? Well, son of a gun, they got a nuke. Go figure. Ladies and gentlemen, they don't know what they're doing on any foreign policy front. But I will sing a song and love you. I'm going to play you some Tony Blinken when we come back. Prove to you that it's real. News Talk 1110-993 WBT. It is the Brent Winterbull Show. 704-570-1110 is the number. I found it. I dug it up. I found it. I have people texting me saying they don't believe that Tony Blinken actually sings music. He was singing songs. Okay, he sings under the name, are you ready for this? A. Blinken. What is this? It's called lip service? All right, this is Tony Blinken. This is your Secretary of State, ladies and gentlemen. Lip service. I took a look around, nothing to see, but then I finally found somebody like me. This is the guy. He's negotiating with the Iranians. But I was so afraid, yeah. It's terrible. You said you liked me fine. Let's, we'll just go a couple more seconds. This is Abe Lincoln, your Secretary of State. And then I came on to you. But you said, let's just be friends, yeah. Oh, that's good for a run.
As a terrible musician myself, that's terrible.
Is that really bad? I think there's another one on there too. I think you could, if you go on that page, I think you'll find the other one that he sang too. Look, I'm no singer. I can't sing. But I'm also not negotiating Iranian. Like, I think you got to decide, am I going to negotiate nuclear deals or am I going to sing? And of course, you know, he also has a performance of Hoochie Coochie Man, which it's like, listen, I know we've had a very tense night here negotiating on the Iranian nuclear deal. And I just would like to serenade the mullahs with a little something called the Hoochie Coochie Man. And they'll put a fatwa on you for that because they're going to think you're doing some kind of witchcraft or something at them. They're not going to put up with that. That's Tony Blinken. You knew I wanted to come on to you. Oh, what's this? What's this one called?
Without Ya.
Without Ya. Tony Blinken, the Secretary of State. Tony Blinken and the Cabinet. Oh my gosh. Woman's always on my mind. Is that Biden on backups? I think that's Hunter Biden on drums. Woman's got the best of me. Wow. Wow. I mean, that's really quite something. Have you heard the stuff the stuff that Kamala sings? Kamala's got some songs too, and John Kerry. Oh, no, wait, John Kerry doesn't sing. He just brings James Taylor to show up to terrorist victims and has them play You've Got a Friend. He did that in Paris after Charlie Hebdo. He brought James Taylor. He's like, oh, there's nothing I can do about the terrorist attack that recently happened in Paris, but I have brought you, ladies and gentlemen, James Taylor singing You've Got a Friend. Nothing soothes the French soul after a terrorist attack like a little Jimmy T. A little Jimmy T doing You've Got a Friend. That's just really, I mean, come on. I'd be more impressed if Abe Lincoln was like a death metal band or something. Like he was like really doing, like Screaming Trees. Oh, that'd be a different kind of music. Welcome back, Brett Winterble Show. I just wanted to pay off on that because I say things and I feel like people don't believe that I'm telling you the truth. And I'm telling you the truth. That's Abe Lincoln. That's his performance name, Abe Lincoln. Taking a look at one of the other things that I hit on Rush. Did you see the story about the Cicada Brood X? Cicada Brood X got involved with what was going on with Joe Biden attempting to go out of the country. The press plane attempted to take off last night to head on over to Europe for this summit that's going to be happening on a number of different levels. And a bunch of cicadas got into the plane. A bunch of them got into the plane, and they had to turn the plane around because of the cicada impacts. So they had to switch out, get a different airplane, and go today. You know what's weird is on Sunday, Vice President Harris was supposed to head down to Guatemala. They got up in the air. They were up in the air for like 30 minutes. They had to turn around and come back because they had some kind of a malfunction on the board. So now we can't get our aircraft up. Now we can't get our aircraft up in the air doing its thing. And then there's this, ladies and gentlemen, China is returning to its strict COVID restrictions. China announcing now that they have a brand new outbreak of COVID. I got a bad feeling about this. Neighborhoods are under strict lockdown. Thousands have been quarantined. Millions have been tested in mere days. Overseas arrivals locked up for weeks and sometimes months. China has followed variations of that formula for dealing with the coronavirus for more than a year, and a new outbreak suggests they could be part of Chinese life for some time to come. China appeared to get the coronavirus under control nearly a year ago. No, they didn't. This didn't tell you what the real numbers were. But hundreds of millions of Chinese people remain unvaccinated. New variants of the coronavirus have appeared, and questions remain about whether China's self-made vaccines can stop them. The latest cases have been found in Guangzhou, the capital of the southern province of Guangdong. So Guangzhou is in Guangdong. And that's where they're looking at the latest Delta variant, which has caused widespread loss of life in India. So that India variant has now made its way into the People's Republic of China. The city tested practically its entire population of 18.7 million people between Sunday and Tuesday, some of them for the second time, also put neighborhoods with a total of more than 180,000 residents into total lockdowns. Now, President Biden came out today and announced as part of his process that we are going to buy 500 million doses of coronavirus vaccine to give to the rest of the world. Obviously, it's not going to cover the entirety of the world, but President Biden said we're buying 500 million doses to send out around the world to try to fight this atrocious illness. It was a report. Let me see. I just want to get you the active information on this. It was a report that said we're going to buy 500 million doses. I'm trying to see which drug companies it is. I thought I saw that it was Pfizer, that they were doing Pfizer at a half a billion doses. He's going to send the vaccines to 100 different countries, he says. It's Pfizer-BioNTech donating 500 million doses of coronavirus vaccine to 100 countries over the next year. He's announcing his plans at the G7 meeting in Britain on Thursday, according to three people familiar with the plans. I love, that's how they get more credibility, you know, the reporters. They go, I have it on good authority from 19 sources in the White House that 27 people have agreed that Russia stole the election. So that's what we got. We've got the U.S. government getting ready. And I'm hoping Joe Biden will at that point say, listen, this proves that America is not a hateful, racist, evil country, since we're going to give 500 million doses out to the rest of the world. Oh, he's there with the first lady there in England. We'll monitor. We may be dipping into that in just a bit. 704-570-1110. News Talk 1110-993 WBT. Hey, Boomer Von Cannon.
Sir.
Back in the day when you were doing music, would you have played some of that Tony Blinken music out there?
Oh, man, I heard that and I was just...
You know what that reminded me of? You ever watch Midnight at the Apollo when they broom the guy off the stage?
They bring out the hook.
They get the hook. They got to get him out of here.
Get him out of here.
Get over to Tehran. Get off the stage.
You know, I heard you playing some of those tracks, and I was just thinking this, like they say here in the South, bless his heart.
Are we blessing or... Oh, Tony Blinken covered this. Let's see. Did he improve it? News Talk 1110-993 WBT, Brett Winterbull Show. Coming up at the beginning of this next hour, new study coming out about what was being sold at the Wuhan wet market, and it's not looking good for those people that want to push the wet market narrative on COVID-19. We just told you there's now a new outbreak inside of China. Let's go out on the phones and check in. Terry's up first. Terry, welcome to the show. What's on your mind?
Hey, Brad. Good to talk to you again.
And you, how are you doing? What's on your mind?
I'm doing great. In response to Mr. Blinken,
yes, sir.
I would like to add this. Mr. Lincoln, I wish you were really here.
Whoa.
Because things have changed a lot in 100 days.
Wow.
And I don't think it's working like you planned. Mm-hmm. Oh, Mr. Lincoln, we could use a hand.
All right.
Or at least a realistic mind.
Well, you know, you see what you did there? You outperformed Tony Blinken, a.k.a. Abe Lincoln. And you outperformed him there. So
I don't think I did that.
So here's what we're going to have to do. We're going to have to figure out at some point in the future, once things really, really open up and we can actually socialize in person, you know, for real, down the road. We may have to have a Charlotte's Got Talent kind of a thing, and we'll use Tony Blinken as the standard, and then we'll measure everybody against Tony Blinken, and we'll see how people perform. Well said, Terry. I appreciate you being out there. We go now to Craig. Craig, you don't have to sing your call. That's okay. You could just let her rip. What's going on?
No plan on singing. I was just heard on the news, you know, about these guns that are being stolen out of cars in Charlotte.
Yes.
And how so many of them are being stolen from people who are having unlocked cars.
Yes.
So one of the theories I have is a lot of these guns are actually being sold to fences or to acquaintances for quite a bit more than their value of purchase. And then the people that are just reporting them stolen from their car. They're selling the felons.
Wow, yeah, that's an interesting theory. That's an interesting theory that could be. The problem is if you report a gun stolen and you sign that it was stolen and you lie, you're going to go to jail for that. I mean,
I think a lot of these people selling them aren't smart enough to understand that.
Yeah. But I mean, if you are really claiming you that it was stolen, that's an interesting point. Because see, what I was thinking was sort of a derivative of that. I was thinking you agree to buy it, you know, under the table, and then you just leave the car unlocked and the gun is gone, right?
Yeah.
But here's the thing. either way, it's eventually going to get traced back to whoever originally owned it. And if there is no report of a theft, they're going to be in trouble. If there is a report of a theft, they could still be in trouble. I don't understand it myself, frankly. I mean, I'm a firearm owner. I would never, ever, ever leave a firearm in an unlocked vehicle. I mean, I don't know anybody with an ounce of sense that would ever do that. I mean,
there's a lot of people out there who have no sense. And then I really do think there's a lot of people who are just offloading them to felons, whether they know them or not. These people take them, they file off serial numbers, and they just disappear.
Yeah.
And the cops just never catch who commits the murder with the crime, or if they do, they just can't trace it back.
Yeah, it's an interesting point. I appreciate the point, Craig, and it's an important one that we ought to be thinking about, because, you know, as you look at the situation, we are seeing an uptick in violence in a lot of communities. We're seeing certainly in our bigger cities upticks in gun violence. We had a record number of killings last year, and now we see this year, a fairly high number as well. You're seeing homicides on a fairly regular basis, usually involving firearms. So this has to be managed. It has to be dealt with. It has to be addressed, and it has to be done so seriously, because we are very, very quickly getting to a place where if the streets aren't safe, then what exactly is going on here? You know, what is the answer to these challenges that we are facing out there? You know, I look at this and I find myself kind of just in wonderment about the general picture of things. Again, if you own a firearm, it is incumbent upon you to make sure you've got it secured and to make sure it's not available for somebody to take out of your car because your car's not locked. First of all, and I know I'm going to sound like I'm contradicting myself from yesterday. What are you doing without locking your car? On a public street, in your garage? Okay, maybe it's a different situation. But on a public street, why would you leave your car unlocked? I mean, that to me is just bizarre. And, you know, you just have to ask these questions. Okay, what are we going to do to make our communities a lot safer? It takes a commitment. And when you have the defunding the police narrative, the way you have the defunding the police narrative, that's approaching a crisis. I saw Bill de Blasio has come out now and said he wants more law enforcement on the streets to interdict guns. And he says, without any notion of irony or hypocrisy, Bill de Blasio has been saying this. He says, look, I understand we got a lot of crime on the streets. But that's because of all the guns that were bought during the pandemic. So I don't want you looking at me and saying, like, I made us less safe by defunding the police. It's the guns that are making us less safe. And people are saying, wait a minute, you are truly a gluteal clown. You are a gluteus maximus clown. If that is what you really think you're going to be able to sell to people, don't go blaming me for defunding the police and emptying the jails. Blame the guns. Blame the inanimate object that is somehow propelling itself into usage and the murder of innocent people. But I need help, so you guys got to really help me out. Send me some cops. You know, 2,000 have already quit. 2,000 cops quit. Oh, that was the other thing de Blasio said. The reason why the streets are so dangerous in New York right now, by the way, is because we had a lot of cops get sick during the pandemic and they couldn't patrol. Again, another lie. That's all they do is lie. See, these folks understand one thing. Rules for thee, but not for me. There is a candidate for mayor in New York City named Maya, oh my gosh, what's her name? I'm drawing a blank. Maya Riley, I think, is her name. If I'm mistaken the name, I will correct it at the top of the next hour. She wants to defund the police. She wants to defund the police. She lives in a gated community with private security. Now, you tell me why it is that you can live in a gated community with private security and at the same time be publicly known as somebody who wants to defund, decommission law enforcement. That is not living up to the standard, and you have got to live to the standard. And if you're not willing to live to the standard, stop calling for a standard that cannot be adhered to. in your own personal life? What if I told you, and I'm going to tell you in the beginning of this next hour, what if I told you no bats or pangolins were sold at the Wuhan wet markets immediately before the COVID-19 pandemic started? Oxford University did a study, and that's what they found. And then I'm going to tell you what Tony Fauci is saying out there on the Faucho stump. News Talk 1110 and 99.3 WBT. It is the Brett Witterbull Show. Great to be here with you. So we are going to go back out on the phones. I'm going to let you hear more great sound. I promise I will not make you hear any more Tony Blinken. But let me pay off on something I was talking about as we went into the end of the hour, and it is this. So Oxford University has done a study. This is an important study for the purposes of looking at the COVID-19 virus, right? Because I'm a subscriber in believing it's a lab-based virus that leaked or was released, okay? That's my orientation. And so Oxford, this is the Daily Mail, and they note in this study, no bats or pangolins were sold at the Wuhan wet markets immediately before the COVID-19 pandemic started, according to Oxford University. Now, people ask all the time, well, what's a pangolin? What's a pangolin? A pangolin, think of it as like an anteater. You've seen anteaters, but it's covered in scales. So it looks like almost like an anteater married an armadillo, I guess, is sort of how it would look. Research looked at 50,000 animals traded in Wuhan from 2017 to 2019. Scientists found no evidence that bats or pangolins kept at the markets in the city. Okay, they found that. No bats or pangolins were sold in the city. The research documents a menagerie of 50,000 animals from 38 different species. So these are the food products that they sell at the Wuhan wet market. And if you've got small kids in the car, I'll give you 10 seconds if you want to change the dial, because I don't want anybody getting upset. Anybody crying all the way home. You know, it's just, but okay. 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Here goes. Research documents a menagerie of 50,000 animals from 38 species being sold in that market, including badgers, boars, peacocks, pit vipers. They were all traded at animal markets in the Chinese city from 2017 to 2019. The team found no evidence that a single bat or pangolin was kept at the market, leading them to conclude that these species, frequently blamed for COVID-19, were not likely the spillover host of the coronavirus. Instead, they argue that scores of wild animals kept in filthy cages and neglected by merchants provided an abundance of routes for COVID-19 to pass on to humans. But wait, it's a bat virus. Chris Newman from the University of Oxford told Mail Online some of these species are known to host a variety of diseases. Okay, what about the bat virus? Few have been identified as competent hosts of COVID-19, but the main suspected spillover hosts, bats and pangolins, were not for sale in the markets. Our data cannot determine how humans became infected with COVID-19, only that direct contact with pangolins or bats in these markets seem highly implausible. Okay, we know three people in the lab got sick with the COVID-19 virus. Like, we know that. That's been admitted. But we're going to go pretend that the Wuhan wet market is really where it came from. Okay, all right, I'll follow that. The authors, whose work was published in Scientific Reports on Wednesday, said the thousands of animals that were traded in Wuhan were capable of hosting a wide range of infectious zoonotic diseases or disease-bearing parasites. Mmm, yummy. The creatures that were sold for huge sums. Marmot meat. I don't even know what a marmot is. I know what a varmint is. What is a marmot? Was five times the cost of pork. This is not subsistence bushmeat, but a costly delicacy. I would pay money not to eat that delicacy, actually. Hold on. This is now going to be the way I stop people who are accusing me of something on the phone. Would you like to see, TJ? I'm going to say, hold on right there. This is not subsistence bushmeat. This is a radio program. China claims it has since cracked down on these hotbeds for disease, outlawing the sale of live animals. But more than a year after the first outbreak, people still could pack into these markets to buy food, including live fish, frogs, and turtles. I don't have a problem with that. That's like regular food food. I mean, I'm not going to eat turtles. I'm not going to eat frogs, but I know that there are people who do. And I'm going to eat fish. I'm all good with that. The study the authors wrote said that there is a persistent desire among Chinese people to trade in so-called charismatic species, which are considered prestige items. Okay, so here's the question I have for you then. And I think it's a fair question to ask. How many zoonotic outbreaks occurred at that market that were not COVID-19? See, that's the natural question that one wants to ask. Okay, so if it's not zoonotic, if it is zoonotic, what are the sorts of things that happened out there that people got sick from that were there in the market? Because it was China. China that said that the wet market was the source of the outbreak of the COVID-19. And they said it was those animals. And they said it was bats and pangolins. You're not saying that the PRC would lie, are you? I mean, if you can't trust the Chinese Communist Party, I mean, what's left in this world? Who can you trust? That's absurd. Well, I'm going to then stick with the lab theory, because the lab theory makes the most sense. Tony Fauci was funneling Juan to the lab. Tony Fauci was getting emails about scientists getting sick at the lab. Tony Fauci knows that there was gain-of-function research happening, generally speaking, but wants to say it wasn't funded by us. So I'm going to conclude that it's more likely that this emanated from a lab than it did from the Wuhan wet market. And I think that all of the progressives who voted for Joe Biden and Kamala Harris owe bats and pangolins and the Wuhan wet market an apology for besmirching them. Because it's pretty clear to me, this thing came out of the Wuhan virology lab. Your thoughts straight ahead. News Talk 1110-993 WBT. It is the Brett Winterbull Show. Let's go back out on the phones and check in with Mitch. Hello, Mitch. What's going on? Welcome to the show.
Hey, I just want to let you know, I had what is now called COVID. At the time, they called it the weird Fort Mill virus in December of 2019. I had insomnia, and one night at 2 in the morning, mm-hmm. I was flipping through the news on Google, and I found a thing that said, it was listed, Dr. Fauci creates a new disease. So I was like, well, what's the new disease, and how do you pronounce that? And I watched this, it was about a 10-minute thing, and now they've found out that it's escaped the lab. They got rid of it. Really, it's off the, you can't find it now. I have spent probably 20 hours trying to find it. It's gone.
Yeah.
But he bragged about having this disease made in the Wuhan lab because he needed it so that he could make a virus, a vaccine, in the event this ever happened naturally.
Oh.
And he also bragged about
that's the gain of function.
Money to that lab to have it made.
Well, okay. So let me unpack some of this. So I don't think he bragged about laundering money, but he was asked about this repeatedly by Rand Paul and a number of other senators who wanted to know, how did you do this, right? John Kennedy asked him about this. Cash is fungible, money is fungible. If you give money to an organization and it's not specifically defined in a specific account for a specific purpose, it just goes into the pile. They're going to spend it on whatever they want to. And the research that's at question here is gain of function, because I read an article, and I did it on the air here a couple of weeks ago, that said there are pieces inside the COVID-19 that are HIV-type molecules. So this thing is not a naturally occurring in nature kind of a deal, to be certain. Jim is next up. Jim, welcome to the program. What's on your mind today?
Yes, hello, Brett. Thank you for having me on the show. Sorry I couldn't call in yesterday, but My son was graduating from high school.
Ah, congratulations. That's great news, man. I'm happy to hear that.
Yes, he says it didn't feel like it was real.
Well, I'm glad he graduated this year. That's really good news.
Yeah, yeah. So now he's out from under the jackboot of socialist tyranny in the public school system.
So what is he going to do now?
Go to the jackboot tyranny of the junior college system.
There you go. See, there you go. Wow. So
for a couple of years, he's going to sort things out, figure out what he wants to do. His big sister is helping him with all the, you know, the FAFSA and the credits and everything like that. She's a real...
It's a lot of work. It's a lot of work you got to go through to do that. Yeah, absolutely.
She knows her way around the neighborhood. I was really impressed yesterday. And I saw her, my two grandkids, and another one on the way.
Well, look at that. Look at that.
Yeah.
That's right. That's
family awesome. Day. So
I'm happy for you, man. Congratulations and best. What's your son's first name?
Same as mine.
Jim. Jim, congratulations, Jim. Congratulations. I'm so happy to hear that we got somebody who was able to escape the clutches of the socialist industrial complex.
Yeah, but, you know, the most important thing is his friends. He's so many of his friends. They got together and had a big barbecue afterwards. And
oh, that's great.
So they just don't even want to be a part of the political bipolar situation. They just
no
want
doubt.
To enjoy their lives. And
way to go.
And get through the whole thing. Like the kids in St. Elmo's Fire have no awareness of political.
Very good. All right, great stuff, Jim. I appreciate you checking in, and all the best to Jim from San Diego, who also graduated. And I'm assuming you graduated, Jim. I mean, imagine that was the case, but I don't want to presume. 704-570-1110 is the number. So January 6th, we remember that insurrection that day on January 6th, don't we? Like that was live while it was happening. I think that was I with the coach that day or was he on the next day? Well, whatever it was, we were on live that day and we were watching in real time and I was kind of doing a play-by-play of the chaos that was breaking out there at the Capitol. And there's this push for this January 6th commission. Well, the Senate, one of the Senate oversight committees, I believe it's the Homeland Security and Government Affairs Committee, released a report. And the report that they released was something that I could have predicted would be released. And it's this. The answer to what happened on January the 6th was the system failed. The system failed. What was the cause of September the 11th? The system failed. What was the cause of Hurricane Katrina? The system failed. What was the cause of the mortgage meltdown back in 2008? Barney Frank and lending money to people who shouldn't be able to borrow money. No. It was the system failed. When government happens, and government can happen anywhere, you got to have paper towels and newspaper. You never know when government can break out in your kitchen, on the street, anywhere. You got to have plastic bags, paper towels and newspaper, because government can happen anywhere. And when it happens and it doesn't happen right, it's the system that failed. And it is the great, great dodge of humankind. So let me give you a little example of the system failed. Amy Klobuchar, no one closer to Joe Biden than Amy Klobuchar. Usually she was standing next to him on the debate stage. Amy Klobuchar, who along with Roy Blunt, were the two shepherds of the Biden-Harris administration on Inauguration Day on January 20th. Amy Klobuchar, she who once tried to vanquish Brett Kavanaugh, labeling him a raging alcoholic. Amy Klobuchar, high standing, big time points in the Democratic Party. She comes out last night and talks to no less than PBS. PBS. This is Amy Klobuchar's version of the system failed. Cut number 29, go.
There was just no preparation for this kind of an event, despite the fact that you had reports on social media of people posting pictures of the underground tunnels and the maps to the underground tunnels. So the number one thing, no preparation, no really plan for where the officers were stationed. This was not the fault in any way of the frontline officers.
Okay. So it's the fault of who? And when you ask these Congress critters and these senators, well, then who did it? Who's it the fault of? Well, they say Donald Trump and the 75 million people who voted for Donald Trump. Okay, I get it. But really, who was to blame for the breakdown there at the Capitol? Because what happened was they tried to do an investigation into what happened, and they got stonewalled by the sergeant at arms, who's under the control of Nancy Pelosi. They got stonewalled by the Department of Homeland Security, who is under the control now of the Biden administration. They got stonewalled by the Department of Injustice, which is now under the control of the Biden administration. They got stonewalled by the Capitol Police, which is under the control of Nancy Pelosi. The point of the matter is the system failed. I can tell you why the system failed. Because, well, I'll tell you in just a few minutes. Stick around for that. We'll take your calls on it as well, because this is about to become a big-time example of political theater. 704-570-1110. News Talk 1110 and 99.3 WBT. It is the Brett Weatherbull Show. So the system failed. The system failed. And we have to have a commission, and we have to have an investigation, and it has to go on for at least the next 2 years, just in time for the 2022 election. The January 6th insurrection investigation, I think, is incredibly interesting on a number of levels. We heard right in the aftermath of this riot that took place at the Capitol on January 6th, we heard right in the aftermath of that, we need a 9/11 style commission to investigate what it is that went wrong. In fact, if I recall correctly, I'm not going to dodge responsibility. I think I said that I thought that that was probably a smart way to go, to get an independent commission together to look at what happened on January the 6th. And you go and you pick four Republicans, four Democrats, whatever you want to do, and you have them put together a report. That is not what Nancy Pelosi wanted. Nancy Pelosi wanted a politically motivated report. What she wanted was impeachment 3. Impeachment 3, Trump's still not president. You know, that's what she wanted to do. And so she wanted to have your very good friends, like your favorite people. Just go through the list, right? Swally Swalwell, a.k.a. Fang Fang Swalwell. She wanted Shifty Schiff, a.k.a. Pencil Neck. She wanted Jerry the Nads Nadler, who famously said on the streets of New York, or no, the streets of D.C., Antifa's not a real organization. Antifa is an ideology, which was then parroted by Christopher Wray. So she wanted all those partisan chairmen of committees in the Congress to subpoena and bring in people and question them and then come out with what was going to be like a nakedly partisan report. And trust me when I tell you this, and I'm serious, you do not want to see a nakedly partisan report coming from Jerry Nadler, Adam Schiff, and Fang Fang Swalwell. You don't want to see that naked report. That is something that could really. What was the Greek mythological figure that if you looked at it, you turned to stone? Oh, Medusa. Yeah. So Medusa would be Nancy, and then each of the snakes on the head would be one of those chairmen of the committee. And if you made eye contact, suddenly you were stone cold. Rainbow. Here's the thing. If you're going to have an independent commission and you're going to have four people and they're going to just do interviews and talk to people just like the 9/11 commission did, okay, that's something you can do that, right? You could do that, but that's not what they want to have happen. What they want to have happen is an investigation that says, see, we knew it. We knew it. Marjorie Greene Taylor and Laura Boebert and Josh Hawley and Ted Cruz and Nazis and Proud Boys and Nazis and Al-Qaeda and Nazis and Nazis and more Nazis. All those people. We want them to be the people that we blame for this. Do you know why the National Guard did not move in expeditious fashion on the insurrection of January the 6th? Do you have anybody know? Anybody? I can tell you what it is. Do you remember an incident that took place in the summer of 2020? There were riots in Washington, D.C., and protests in Washington, D.C., and they were right outside the White House, if you remember. And then there was this night, gosh, I want to say it was a Thursday or a Friday night. It was like a Thursday or a Friday night in June or July. Do you remember this incident? Donald Trump decides he's going to take a walk to the church and stand there with the Bible in his hand. Do you guys remember that? Remember that image? I mean, I remember that, like, okay. He's got it upside down, and he's standing in front, and he's I think he's got a fist while he's holding it in the other hand. I mean, it was a very, very odd kind of a image. But what happened was, here's what happened. What happened was Mayor Muriel Bowser of Washington, D.C. was so upset that the National Guard was used to clear Lafayette Park, that she issued an edict in the city of Washington that the National Guard was not to, like, not to deploy in that way. Because she's like the boss of the National Guard in D.C. because it's like a city state, basically, right? So she didn't want the National Guard to deploy. Because it's not right to deploy the National Guard against private citizens who are just trying to kill Rand Paul. No. But you know, it's, you're not supposed to deploy the National Guard. So on January the 6th, the National Guard didn't get deployed because there was a pre-existing order coming from the Washington, D.C. government that said, we don't want you guys operating. But then what about the Capitol Police? And what about the videos of the Capitol Police people opening the barriers and letting people go in? And then what about all these other things that are kind of like parts of the whole story that are parts of prosecutions? You're never going to get the full story because you got all these prosecutions that first have to go through the court system. You're not going to be able to interview witnesses who are going to go on the record and admit information that might go against them. There's a lot of stuff that could get uncovered. You remember Bank of America, how they worked in cahoots? I talked about it on the show. They went and they did a triangulation throughout Washington, D.C. All the people who were in Washington, D.C. that were also B of A customers, and they triangulated based on phones and to figure out, had you been in town? Where were you buying stuff? What was the purpose of your visit? It's a lot of stuff. Remember the two pipe bombs? Nobody ever told you whatever happened with the pipe bombs. Who put the pipe bombs? We don't know. I mean, I didn't tell you to put the bomb on. Who told you to put the bomb on? Who told you to put the pipe bomb? I don't. That was a Seinfeld reference. The thing is, it's like, where what happened with the pipe bombs? And then there's the two letters you shall not say in an investigation. A-B. A-B. You say this name, you will be shunned. I'm going to say it. Ashley Babbitt. We still don't know who killed her. We still don't know why they killed her. And we still don't know why that shot was fired in such close quarters that she had Capitol Police SWAT members directly behind her. And a bad shot would have been a through and through wound into Capitol Police officers that was fired by somebody. We don't know who. We don't know who. Inside the gallery. See, there's a lot of scabs that can get torn off here if you do this investigation. Doesn't mean we shouldn't do the investigation. It just means that it's going to look really bad on Nancy Pelosi because she's the boss of the Capitol. That's her turf. And so what are we going to do? See, they talk about wanting a 9/11 commission. On 9/11, everybody wanted answers. They're like, what the heck happened? What the heck failed? We cannot have another attack like this on American soil. In this case, it's what the heck happened? How do we avoid blame? How do we blame the other guy? And that's, in large measure, I'm both ends of the spectrum. So good luck. You can't get an infrastructure bill. Good luck getting an insurrection bill. It's going to be difficult. News Talk 1110 99 WBZ. Are you seeing this video? So that's Griff Jenkins wading into the Rio Grande. And there's somebody who just crossed from Mexico into Texas on the Rio Grande. He's waving to these guys. He's waving at Griff Jenkins. This is on Fox News. He's waving at Griff Jenkins to, like, come over here. Do you think they're going to abduct Griff Jenkins and just pull him into Mexico? Like, that would be super dangerous, man. Like Griff Jenkins is walking all kind of gingerly. This guy's kind of like just sitting in the dock of the bay. No, he's sitting in the river. Griff Jenkins is like, I can't go over there, man. I feel like you're going to grab me, pull me across, and then nobody can come and save me. You're going to have to send out the strike team of Sean Hannity and Pete Hegseth. I'll have to come in paratrooper style. Because, you know, Sean Hannity's an MMA fighter. Like, he'll tell you that. But there's Jenkins. Look at Jenkins. Okay, Griff Jenkins is standing in the Rio Grande. Like, in perfectly good pants. Does he think he's hurricane coverage? Does he think he's Shepard Smith? What's going on there? He's down there. He's like, hey, did you just sneak across the border live on Fox TV? Yes, I did. Come over here and talk to me. No, I'm not going to go over there. I think that's international waters, and I could not come back then. I do remember there was a time about 4 or 5 years ago that Geraldo was down on the border. This is one of the great Geraldo stories. So remember when Geraldo, during the invasion of Iraq, was embedded with troops, and he drew the map in the sand out on the ground about where the troops were going and what they were going to do, and everybody was like, oh, you just put a plan live on TV for the Iraqis to see. And that was a big controversy. But Geraldo at one point went down to the border with Mexico and was trying to make the point. There was barbed wire fencing. It was just like ranch fencing. And there's barbed wire fencing. And Geraldo Rivera's like, right now I'm standing in the United States of America, but as I step over this fence, I'm now in Mexico. And he's kind of trying to show scale of like how vast it is. So he's stepping backwards with his arms like out. And he's like, right now I am absolutely, this is Mexico where I'm standing. This is how tight the border is here. I'm literally talking to you from Mexico. So now here I am, I'm coming back in. I'm back in the United States now, and that's the difference. Well, he got in trouble because that was an illegal exit and entry. It was an illegal exit from the United States into Mexico and an illegal entry back into the United States. And I think they had to submit the video to be like, it really wasn't a felony. He was just trying to make a point and it was dumb. He shouldn't have done that. He should have held a stick over the border and said, the tip of the stick is in Mexico, but I'm here in the United States. This is cross-border cooperation. These reporters all kind of do this sort of stuff. And it makes me laugh because I've told you a number of times, I grew up on the border with Mexico in El Paso, and you could go down to the border and you could understand that there's the Rio Grande, but then you could go to other places that are just frontier and you wouldn't know that you were in Mexico. And one of the great challenges that I experienced as you would travel, because you would leave El Paso, you would drive 90 miles east, and there would be a Border Patrol checkpoint in the middle. It's in Texas. You're probably 15 miles from Mexico, 20 miles from Mexico itself, but you're in Texas, and they ask you, what is your nationality? Where are you from? Whatever. And you're like, whoa, this is an in-the-country border checkpoint, and we are in the United States. Well, it's because they're budgeting for those people that come across in the frontier, then try to get on Interstate 10 to head out to either 10 or 20. And so what happens is when you're out there in that huge frontier, what'll happen, especially nowadays with your cell phone, is you'll be driving and you'll have your cell phone and there won't be any service. And then all of a sudden there will be service. Like it'll be like, bing, service. And you're like, this is great. I got service finally over here. I got some service. Hey, how come this says Telefónica Mexico? What is that all about? Well, it's the Mexican cell service from Mexico. And if you then decide to call your family or friends here in the United States, you're going to get like a $19.95 a minute bill for using, because it's an international call to use their services. The point of this is it's hard to define where things are, except where you have these big checkpoints along the river or big cities. But out in the middle of the desert, the Sonoran Desert, where it gets incredibly hot and it's dry and there's not a lot of assets out there, you know, you could just come across and probably get away with it. But the guaranteed way to come across and to get away with it is, of course, to know that those Border Patrol agents are distracted. So how would you distract a group of Border Patrol agents? Well, what you would do is you would take a caravan of 15 or 20 children and women, or children and men and women, and you would send them across a border checkpoint at a border crossing, but a part of the frontier, and send them in that general direction, let them kind of get a little bit into distress and wait for the CBP guys to roll up or see it in a drone or see it on a security camera or what have you. And then they have to deploy assets. Well, you don't have a million man guarding capability along the border with Mexico. You have people every 15, 20 miles. I mean, you've ever driven out into the woods or whatever, there's not park rangers everywhere. You just got to hope that a park ranger may see you if something should happen. So what ends up happening is all those assets get deployed there. Well, what happens next? Well, think about it this way. How many times have you driven on an interstate and you pass a state trooper that's on the side of the road? Then you do a calculus and you go, okay, there's a state trooper sitting right there on that side of the road that I just passed. I decelerated. Now, I'm now out of his field of vision. I'm willing to bet it's probably at least 30, 40 miles till I see another state. There's no reason why they're going to stack state troopers up every 5 or 10 miles. Same thing with the border enforcement situation. So you're going to say, okay, Border Patrol's over here. I'm willing to bet that this sector is now totally unguarded. And that's where we're going to run in Yemenis and Saudis and terrorists and drugs and fentanyl. And we're just going to run that stuff through. That's what they do. Once upon a time, what they would do at the border before this crisis where they were using children and women and people in distress, what they would do is they would take a truckload of drugs of a certain amount and they would run it through a checkpoint, knowing that it was going to get spotted. Okay, so they have 200 pounds of dope going across the checkpoint, knowing that they were going to get interdicted, while simultaneously 40 miles away, they were sending in a huge load of drugs, knowing that they'll catch that, but they're not going to catch this, because we're going to make them use their resources to bring the drug dogs in, all that stuff in, that we can go across the frontier and we can pull this off. Then they got sophisticated and they started digging tunnels. And the tunnels they dig between places like Tijuana and San Diego are unbelievably sophisticated. They build them from warehouses into warehouses. And they may be as long as a mile. And they're supported and they are cement and they are a lot like those tunnels you see being used by Hamas. Soundproof, air conditioned, you can move whatever contraband or human beings you want in the dead of night, and you don't pop up under a tree, you pop up in a warehouse, they bring in a van, you climb in the back of the van, and you go rolling through town. And nobody knows what it is. That is the level of sophistication on these smugglers. So whatever Griff Jenkins is doing interviewing this man who's now crossed this border, who's covering his face with a T-shirt, which tells me he may be known to the authorities on some level and doesn't want to get run because he's got a very interesting tattoo on his arm. This is a distraction. 704-570-1110, News Talk 1110. It is the Brett Winterbull Show, News Talk 1110 and 99.3 WBT. Great to be here with you on the Wednesday edition of the program. 704-570-1110 is the number to be part of this. And I just saw something that I think is really interesting. So apparently the North Carolina DMV is warning that waits for in-person appointments is up to 45 days now. Obviously, I'm thinking this is because of the pandemic. I can tell you firsthand that over in South Carolina, you can just show up and get an appointment. Like, you just walk in and do whatever it is that you need to do there in North Carolina. I mean, in South Carolina. So, you know, things are going to, they're going to take a certain amount of time to get back to how, you know, we got used to things. This pandemic has messed a lot of stuff up. And it's a tough situation all the way as we continue to monitor all the big stories that are out there. One of the things that I was looking at earlier today, and I'm thinking about here as we consider sort of the way this news cycle is working, is unfolding, is how it is that people are going to be motivated to get back to work and to get back to normal. And we had that poll number that came out yesterday, the fact that 71% of Democrats want people to wear masks and stay home and not necessarily go to work. I'm not casting a judgment, but I am looking at this with a great deal of interest because what is it going to be? What is it going to take that gets you to go back to work? And you know what's funny? I've been studying television commercials for the last couple of weeks. I've been watching the television commercials that are on my cable system, my TV system, and I've noticed something. Do you remember during the peak of the COVID, there were these commercials that were trying to reassure you in kind of a weird way where they would say, and the coffee tastes like coffee. and your at-home haircuts are okay. And we want to give you a mortgage because we believe in what home is. And remember those commercials were like talking to you like you had somehow been socially scalded and needed to be repaired and brought back to full strength. Well, the commercials now are really weird. I've been seeing this commercial, maybe you have too. The commercial for the vaccine, but it's not for the COVID vaccine, it's for the meningitis vaccine. And you look at this commercial and it says, you can give your children everything, but what if you don't give them enough? And what if you don't get them the shot for the meningitis? And what happens if they get sick? And what happens if they... And you're watching this and you're going, wait a minute, we're coming out of this. Like, you're getting a whole new set of scares going while people are starting to work. And it feels to me like these ad agencies have gone long on agoraphobia. Don't leave your house. That is dangerous out there. Do you know what is lurking out there? No, what's lurking out there? Dangerous danger. Like Carlos Danger? Exactly. Without the laptop. The commercials are all downers. Joe Biden won the election. Joe Biden let you have the 4th of July. Remember he said all you had to do was get a shot and then you can have two hot dogs in the backyard with socially distanced people who are going to join you in a barbecue from their own barbecue in their own yard, but you guys can talk across the fence safely. Remember when Joe Biden said that? When he said, who's a good boy? Who's a good boy? If you get the shot, you will get to have the 4th of July. Why are the commercials not triumphant and celebratory? They're all kind of sad. There's no more funny commercials. There's no more. The point is, the commercials, the storylines on television programs, they're all slanted, super negative. The music is all kind of dirgy and sad. You know, it's all this stuff that's designed to make you feel like you are helpless. And you're not. You're absolutely not. I was looking at a video last night of something that I shot in early 2020, pre-pandemic 2020. So it would have been like probably January. It would have been January. And I was talking to some people. We were joking around. We were talking about like, oh, we got these. I can't wait. This is going to be a great year. We got all this kind of stuff that's happening. And I'm looking at the energy there. Nobody was really aware of the COVID. I think it was probably maybe January 10th or something. And I'm looking at this and I'm going, okay, so nobody's really aware of the COVID. Nobody's freaking out. Nobody's afraid. There's no masks. We're not upset. We're not, you know, all the fallout of whatever. Why don't we just go back to that? And I know I can get phone calls from people who are going to say something like, well, we can never go back. Yes, we can. We can. At some point, the war ended in World War II. And the troops came back home and we got back to life. At some point, we got to a place where we were not as terrified as we were in 2001, 2, and 3 after Al-Qaeda attacked us on 9/11. It was a little iffy in the early going. People were kind of like, oh my God, I don't know if I want to get on an airplane. I don't know if I want to go in the city. I don't know if I want to go do this. But like by 2007 and 2015, you didn't even think about Al-Qaeda anymore. You're like, I'm going to that rock concert. I'm going to go skydive. You know, I'm going to go on vacation. So what's the metric to get back to normal life? I know of at least one graduation that was held today with people in the stands. And people were celebrating the graduates and the graduation. And I think you have a right to be happy. Madison Avenue is working overtime. Overtime. I saw a Progressive commercial where they do this thing and they go, okay, so what's the big surprise? We've had a really tough year. We're just going to kind of keep it mellow. Oh, look, it's whatever the band is, NSYNC. It's NSYNC showing up at the door. Oh, we don't need you. We're not having any fun. Have fun, man. The Chinese Communist Party does not want you having fun. The people in Washington do not want you having fun. Commit now with me that you will promise to have fun this year because we're moving out of this thing. And I get 71% of people want to sit in their house and hide. That's great. My feeling is those people are probably the same people that sat in their houses and hid before the pandemic. I want to go to a live music venue. I want to go to a bar. I want to go to a concert. I want to go to a game. I want to go to a race. I want to go to a vacation destination. I want to get silly. And I think most people do of the program. 704-570-1110 is the number to be to be part of this. And I just saw something that I think is really interesting. So apparently the North Carolina DMV is warning that waits for in-person appointments is up to 45 days now. Obviously, I'm thinking this is because of the pandemic. I can tell you firsthand that over in South Carolina, you can just show up and get an appointment. Like, you just walk in and do whatever it is that you need to do there in North Carolina. I mean, in South Carolina. So, you know, things are going to take a certain amount of time to get back to how, you know, we got used to things. This pandemic has messed a lot of stuff up, and it's a tough situation all the way as we continue to monitor all the big stories that are out there. One of the things that I was looking at earlier today, and I'm thinking about here as we consider sort of the way this news cycle is working, is unfolding, is how it is that people are going to be motivated to get back to work and to get back to normal. And we had that poll number that came out yesterday, the fact that 71% of Democrats want people to wear masks and stay home and not necessarily go to work. I'm not casting a judgment, but I am looking at this with a great deal of interest, because what is it going to be? What is it going to take that gets you to go back to work? And you know what's funny? I've been studying television commercials for the last couple of weeks. I've been watching the television commercials that are on my cable system, my TV system. And I've noticed something. Do you remember during the peak of the COVID, there were these commercials that were trying to reassure you in kind of a weird way, where they would say, "And the coffee tastes like coffee. And your at-home haircuts are okay. And we want to give you a mortgage because we believe in what home is." And remember those commercials were like talking to you like you had somehow been socially scalded and needed to be repaired and brought back to full strength. Well, the commercials now are really weird. I've been seeing this commercial. Maybe you have too. The commercial for the for the vaccine, but it's not for the COVID vaccine. It's for the meningitis vaccine. And you look at this commercial and it says, "You can give your children everything, but what if you don't give them enough? And what if you don't get them the shot for the meningitis? And what happens if they get sick? And what happens if they..." And you're watching this and you're going, wait a minute, we're coming out of this. Like, you're getting a whole new set of scares going while people are starting to work. And it feels to me like these ad agencies have gone long on agoraphobia. Don't leave your house. That is dangerous out there. Do you know what is lurking out there? No, what's lurking out there? Dangerous danger. Like Carlos Danger? Exactly. Without the laptop. The commercials are all downers. Joe Biden won the election. Joe Biden let you have the 4th of July. Remember, he said all you had to do was get a shot, and then you can have two hot dogs in the backyard with socially distanced people who are going to join you in a barbecue from their own barbecue in their own yard, but you guys can talk across the fence safely. Remember when Joe Biden said that? When he said, "Who's a good boy? Who's a good boy? If you get the shot, you will get to have the 4th of July." Why are the commercials not triumphant and celebratory? They're all kind of sad. There's no more funny commercials. There's no more. The point is, the commercials, the storylines on television programs, they're all slanted, super negative. The music is all kind of dirgy and sad. You know, it's all this stuff that's designed to make you feel like you are helpless. And you're not. You're absolutely not. I was looking at a video last night of something that I shot in early 2020, pre-pandemic 2020. So it would have been like probably January. It would have been January. And I was talking to some people. We were joking around. We were talking about like, "Oh, we got these. I can't wait. This is going to be a great year. We got all this kind of stuff that's happening." And I'm looking at the energy there. Nobody was really aware of the COVID. I think it was probably maybe January 10th or something. And I'm looking at this and I'm going, okay, so nobody's really aware of the COVID. Nobody's freaking out. Nobody's afraid. There's no masks. We're not upset. We're not, you know, all the fallout of whatever. why don't we just go back to that? And I know I can get phone calls from people who are going to say something like, well, we can never go back. Yes, we can. We can. At some point, the war ended in World War II, and the troops came back home, and we got back to life. At some point, we got to a place where we were not as terrified as we were in 2001, 2, and 3 after Al-Qaeda attacked us on 9/11. It was a little iffy in the early going. People were kind of like, oh my God, I don't know if I want to get on an airplane. I don't know if I want to go in the city. I don't know if I want to go do this. But like by 2007 and 2015, you didn't even think about Al-Qaeda anymore. You're like, I'm going to that rock concert. I'm going to go skydive. You know, I'm going to go on vacation. So what's the metric to get back to normal life? I know of at least one graduation that was held today with people in the stands. And people were celebrating the graduates and the graduation. And I think you have a right to be happy. Madison Avenue is working overtime. Overtime. I saw a Progressive commercial where they do this thing and they go, okay, so what's the big surprise? We've had a really tough year. We're just going to kind of keep it mellow. Oh, look, it's whatever the band is, NSYNC. It's NSYNC showing up at the door. Oh, we don't need you. We're not having any fun. Have fun, man. The Chinese Communist Party does not want you having fun. The people in Washington do not want you having fun. Commit now with me that you will promise to have fun this year because we're moving out of this thing. And I get 71% of people want to sit in their house and hide. That's great. My feeling is those people are probably the same people that sat in their houses and hid before the pandemic. I want to go to a live music venue. I want to go to a bar. I want to go to a concert. I want to go to a game. I want to go to a race. I want to go to a vacation destination. I want to get silly. And I think most people do. But there's a big drag of people who don't want you to. Do it to spite them. Brett Winterble Show.
And it is the Brett Winterble Show. News Talk 1110 and 99.3 WBT. Great to be here with you. Spending this time with you and breaking down the biggest stories that are out there. Here's a story I want to dive into, though. I think it's hugely important, and I think it's worth getting into, and I think it's worth analyzing. And it's, we know that Kamala Harris has come back and said that, you know, she had this excellent trip, and everything was great, and she is pronouncing it a massive, overwhelming success for the United States of America. She went down to determine the root causes of migration to from Central America to the United States. And I think we all just kind of agree that we know what she's doing and she knows what she's doing. And this is essentially just a giant sort of, it's for show because she doesn't want to get down to the border. And I think that's fair to conclude. I don't see any evidence of any kind that indicates that she wants to go down to the southern border of the United States of America, which to me, I think is incredibly, it's silly. You're creating an ongoing scandal, that doesn't need to be created. And you're using up a whole lot of goodwill from people that otherwise might have some goodwill on the issue. But I want to go to the origination point of what we're looking at in terms of this situation with illegal immigration. Because if you want the root cause, I'm going to give you the root cause. The root cause is the executive order by Joe Biden. It's Joe Biden's executive order, which repealed Donald Trump's executive order that was issued back. It was executive order 13768, enhancing public safety in the interior of the United States. This is put into effect in January of 2017. So what Joe Biden and by extension Kamala Harris did was they repealed the issue that gave us the ability to enforce our immigration law, which had been essentially suspended, for lack of a better term, under the Obama years. And so here's what we have to really kind of get our brains around, okay? And it's a hugely important point. What is inside Donald Trump's executive order that was so radical that had to be repealed? And I know it sounds funny to say it that way, right? So I'm going to read you some of the stuff that's in Trump's executive order about immigration enforcement. And you tell me what is so radical about this. Here is what he says. Section 2 of this executive order, because this matters to today, right? Ensure the faithful execution of immigration laws of the United States, including the Immigration and Naturalization Act, against all removable aliens, consistent with Article 2, Section 3 of the Constitution. Make use of all available systems and resources to ensure the efficient, faithful execution of the immigration laws of the United States. Ensure that jurisdictions that fail to comply with the applicable federal law do not receive federal funds except as mandated by law. Ensure that aliens ordered removed from the United States are promptly removed, and to support the victims and families of victims of crimes committed by removable aliens. They go through these as the different sort of standards, right? Now, who was it that the president was deporting from the country? He was deporting people who had been convicted of any criminal offense, have been charged with any criminal offense, such as a charge has not been resolved, have committed acts that constitute a chargeable criminal offense, engaged in fraud or willful misrepresentation in connection with any official matter or application, have abused any program related to the receipt of public benefits, are subjected to a final order of removal but have not complied with their legal obligation to depart the United States. Those are the main pieces of that horrible executive order of Donald Trump as it relates to the ability to the ability to enforce your immigration law. In essence, here's what it says. It says enforce the immigration laws. That's really it. That's all it says. We are going to enforce the immigration laws. Now, can you imagine the controversy that would ensue if a president issued an executive order on the first day of his administration in which he said, I am directing my executive branch to no longer enforce food safety laws. I am directing the executive branch to no longer enforce the laws that apply to taxes paid to the federal government. Can you imagine how that would go over? You know darn well how that would go over. People would be outraged. They say, oh, children are going to die. You're not doing food safety. You're not doing food inspections. How dare you? There'd be an insurrection march coming up to the Capitol, right? I mean, you know that would be the case. If you said, I'm going to suspend all taxes and we're not going to collect any taxes for the foreseeable future, there'd be a lawsuit instantly brought by the Congress of the United States because they need funding mechanisms. Congress writes the immigration laws. And this is what's important to understand about this whole fake controversy. Congress writes the immigration laws. We had perfectly functioning immigration laws until 1965 when El Drunko himself, Ted Kennedy, decided he's going to rewrite American immigration law. And so at that point in time, the American immigration law inverted in terms of priorities. Ted Kennedy decided that, well, we didn't need to attract scientists and doctors and skilled professionals to come to the United States. No, what we have to do is set up a race-based quota system based on jurisdictions around the world where we must get 17 people from this country and 19 people from that country, rather than saying, hey, let's throw the doors open and let's invite anybody who wants to apply to come in with a visa, but they're going to have to be meeting a couple of different standards. One, they're going to have to be self-sufficient. They can't become a public charge. Two, they may have to have a sponsor. Three, they're going to have to be gainfully employed. And for the term of their visa, they can't commit any crimes. They're going to get sent right out of the country. That was essentially what our history was in terms of immigrating into the United States. You used to have a sponsor who would sign a piece of paper that says, you know what? This is my brother-in-law, Giovanni, and he wants to come to the United States to work. And he's coming to the United States, and Bill Smith, promise, my brother-in-law Giovanni is going to come to the United States and he's not going to go on welfare. I'm going to pay for whatever he needs. I'm going to vouch for this guy. That's how it used to work. And guess what would happen if something would happen with Giovanni? If Giovanni stuck up a liquor store, Giovanni got deported. If Giovanni was found to commit a rape, Giovanni went to prison and then got thrown out of the United States. If Giovanni was found to not be self-sufficient, they went to his brother, Bill Smith, and his brother-in-law, and said, Bill Smith, Giovanni's a bum. He's not working, and he's trying to collect public benefits. So you're going to be on the hook for this. There was an ability to sanction people who sponsored people to come into the United States.
That's how you have enforcement. When you just have the door flown wide open and you use all of these dodges and tricks to say, well, no, this is not about illegal immigration or legal immigration. Nobody is illegal. This is about protecting refugees. What's a refugee? What's a refugee? If I say to you, tell me what a refugee is, you're going to say, wow, it's probably these people who've been targeted because of who they are by awful governments looking to kill or exploit them or harass them or torture them. We should give them an opportunity here in the United States. Yes, we should give them an opportunity in the United States if they're genuine refugees. If they're just coming here for a job, well, that's a different matter entirely. We'll continue the conversation straight ahead. I am Brett Winterbull, News Talk 1110. And welcome back. I'm Brett Winterbull. It is the Brett Winterbull Show, News Talk 1110 and 99.3 WBT. So I want to play a piece of sound from yesterday. This is from yesterday during the White House briefing. The spokesperson, Jen Psaki, was asked directly about Kamala Harris's trip to Central America and about whether or not, now that we've had this excellent trip to Central America, are we going to finally see a trip to the southern border, to the border of the United States of America? Are we gonna finally see that? And Jen Psaki gets a little bit chippy with the answer, takes a pretty broad shot at both former President Donald Trump and the Republicans, you know, because they see these Republicans as a bunch of barriers to getting stuff done that they want to get done, like amnesties. Here is the answer from Jen Psaki about, well, is Kamala Harris going to go to the border?
At some point, she may go to the border. I don't have any trips to preview for you or predict or a timeline for that. But what I would reiterate is that her assignment was to work with countries and leaders in the Northern Triangle to address root causes, address corruption, ensure we're working together to address humanitarian concerns. I will say we're not taking advice from former President Trump or most of the Republicans who are criticizing us on this, given they were all sitting there while we created this problem we walked into, both at the border and with the movement of migration that has been growing over the last year. So we're not taking our guidance and advice from them, but if it is constructive and it moves the ball forward for her to visit the border, she certainly may do that.
There is a profound lack of confidence in this administration, folks, a profound lack of confidence, because if you want the root cause, I just gave you the root cause in the beginning of this half hour of the program, the root cause of why it is that she's not going to go to the southern border is because if you want the root cause, it's the Biden administration coming in and striking the executive order by Donald Trump to enforce immigration law. I cannot overstate this. It's impossible to overstate this, that what they're attempting to do, what they're trying to do is say, we want to remain in a lawless type situation. And what that means is an open border. And if you don't believe that there's an open border, and it's serious when I say this, if you don't believe there's an open border, just pick up the phone and call any elected representative from a district that runs along the border from San Diego to McAllen, Texas, and ask them whether or not the border is open. And they're going to tell you it is. The Democrats will say it is, but that's because of the plight of people, because of the hurricanes, because of abuse, because of all these different attached and appended issues. But ladies and gentlemen, this is why this matters to you here in Charlotte. You pay taxes. You pay taxes. I pay taxes. I want my taxes going to American citizens who may be finding hardship out there, maybe finding themselves in underperforming schools, maybe finding themselves in a different sort of an economic plight, whatever it is. That's what I want to spend my money on. I want to spend my money on homeless veterans. I want to spend my money on the elderly who are American citizens. I don't want to be responsible for the funding of some sort of a government program for people from 75 different countries. Can I say it again? 75 different countries. There's 35 in all of Central and Latin America, including the Caribbean. Kamala Harris is going to tell you that she is a champion for women and girls, and yet we are seeing women and girls victimized at an alarming rate right now as they are kidnapped, abducted, utilized, abused, raped, murdered at the hands of these cartels that are smuggling human beings into the United States.
Why are they using these vulnerable populations to come into the United States? The cartels are not operating from a position of ideology. So this is not like some human rights group has gotten together and said, we're just going to take a 500,000 refugees from Central America and we're going to put them on the American border in the hopes that they will have a better life down the road. That is not how this works. That is not how this works. Do not fall for that for a moment. What this is this is a distraction. And what I mean by that is they're using these migrants as decoys so that they can smuggle drugs. You hear it time and time again when you hear these border agents and senior officials, guys like Art Del Cueto, who I've had on my show, people like Brandon Judson, who I've had on my show, people like Tom Homan, who I've got on my show, you name it, go down the list. These people all tell you exactly what's going on. When you bring a migrant caravan into the United States and you've got children and you dump them in the wilderness and suddenly Customs and Border Protection have to go running to that sector, they're leaving other sectors unguarded. These are human shields, and these are human shields that have been created because Joe Biden rescinded the order that kept the border safe. Cartels are benefiting from this. Human smugglers are benefiting from this. Al-Qaeda, ISIS, you name it, are benefiting from this. And the poor people who have been conned into coming northward in the hopes of a golden ticket from the Biden-Harris, Biden-Obama administration are just collateral damage. It's not even, you don't have to believe what I'm telling you. Just go and read the literature out there. I know once upon a time, this would be a race play, right? It would be, well, you don't want brown and black people coming into the United States. You have people from 75 countries, including Romania, coming into the United States and Southeast Asia coming into the United States. Those are the high profile smugglies. Those are the people that are paying $7,000, $8,000, $9,000, and $10,000. The poor people that are coming in from Mexico and Central America only paying like $1,500, $1,600. And since they can't really pay much more money than that, what they're used for is human shields. I'm telling you, I can make the argument that you should make for you if you oppose what I'm talking about. The argument that you should make is, okay, Brett, then what we need to do is put a task force in place so that we can figure out a more efficient way to manage the border. You're right. But the only way that's going to work is if you re-implement Trump or rewrite it yourself. You don't want to use Trump's language. Rewrite it yourself and say, we are going to deport people who are in violation of the law, and we're not encouraging people to come here who shouldn't be here in the United States. We don't want them making the dangerous trek. We heard Kamala Harris yesterday. She says, don't come, don't come, don't come, don't come, don't come. Okay, got it. But do you believe her when she says it? And the chances are you don't believe her when she says it. The chances are you're looking at her and you're like, that's a hostage tape. It's what I said on Rush yesterday. It's what I said today on Rush. It's a hostage tape. You're saying the words. You're reading the words that you've been told to read, but you may as well be blinking in Morse code. I don't believe this with your eyelids. I don't believe what I'm saying. Don't come. Don't come. Wink, wink. Nudge, nudge. Wink is as good as a nudge, don't you know? That's the fundamental problem with what we're looking at here. It's really not that complicated. Border security is American security, and it's the truth. That's going to do it for us. We've got Charlotte at 6 coming up next. I am Brett Witterbull, News Talk 1110 and 99.3 WBT.